recovered quickly, slamming a fist into Severus's right pauldron and attempting to drag him off balance. He spun his knife point down and tried to punch it into the greenskin's guts, but it flung itself up hard against him, getting in his face, its ugly alien stink and the sweating pressure of its grimy green skin invading the reaver's poised stance before he could strike. He was forced to give ground, and still it kept coming on, another blow from its axe jarring from the ultramarine's blade. There were more orcs with it, trying to work their way round behind him. He could still hear Strix and Phobos fighting, their vox-amplified bellowing interspersed with grunts and the butcher's sounds of metal on meat. They couldn't support him, though. There was too many of the Xenos. Castor had gone, breaking through to the Apps and his brother. They were running out of time. The orc grappled with Severus, his knife locked beneath the axe's head, their free hands both grasping at torsos, as each sought the purchase that would allow them to angle a killing blow. The orc snapped its tusks at him and snarled something indecipherable in its savage tongue, its eyes wild with alien battle lust. There was a little click, barely audible over the orc's grunts and the rasping of Severus's own breath. Both the Primaris and the greenskin glanced down, and realized the arming pin from one of the crude stick grenades strapped to the orc's front had been yanked loose in the tussle. Their eyes met, and Severus experienced the closest thing he ever could to a moment's understanding with an alien beast. He flung himself backwards, just as the thunderclap of the detonation engulfed him. Castor. It seemed as though Castor and Polixis would live. From beyond the walls of the Basilica, the thunder of the Fulminata's assault was audible.
"We are inbound, my brethren," Tyrannus's voice clicked over the voxnet. "Hold firm, for Gilliman and the Emperor!"
Castor felt his spirit soar further, and his tired body blazed with fresh vigor as he struck down one greenskin after another. The Emperor did not abandon the righteous, and he swore in that moment that he would honor the reprieve he and his brother had been granted many times over. Then Extremis hit. The mighty repulsor gravtank had been defiled and cannibalized, its noble machine spirit tortured as cruelly as Polixis had been. Now some insane greenskin creatures had managed to get one of the tank's engines up and running again. The hulking vehicle lurched forwards, only its right side raised up by the gravitic motor blocks, its left flank shrieking and kicking up a shower of sparks as it was dragged across the basilica's floor. Orcs who were too slow to get out of the way were crushed or pulverized. It rammed into the wall along the rear of the apse, sending masonry tumbling. The whole building shook. Castor was closest to the repulsor's impact. He tried to step away from the wall at his back as the stonework started to give, but an orc knob used the opportunity to fling itself against him, slamming him back into the bricks. Its defiance didn't last long. The collapse crushed its skull and broke its back. The impact caused Custer to stumble, then fall, Salve Imperator slipping from his grip. He looked up and realized that the wall's demise had split them apart. Polixis had managed to avoid the worst of the debris, but he had been forced left, and the greenskins were on him again before he could rejoin his brother. Castor let out a bellow and heaved the rubble off himself, power armor grating. He snatched up Salve Imperator and smashed its inactive head into the first orc to come at him from out of the dust shroud that had blanketed the apse. The second beast that emerged was Urgork. The orc warlord roared, the primal savage noise of his race's might reverberating around the defiled space. Its skinning blades were out, and they came for Castor in a hail of blows, driven with a brute force even his Mark X armor couldn't withstand. One carved through his left pauldron, splitting its heraldry and hitting bone, while another overhead swing bit into the top of his backpack, causing him to stumble. He recovered with a snarl, his own rage reigniting. This was the monstrosity that had tried to tear his brother apart, the beast of patchwork, discolored flesh and swollen muscle that sought dominion over mankind's realm. The chaplain rammed Salve Imperator forwards, smashing it against the beast's chest, hearing ribs crack. Urgork showed no sign of having even registered the blow. He came on, his small mismatched eyes wide with a maniacal frenzy, foam bubbling from between his thick tusks.
"I will break you, Xenos!" Castor snarled as he met it. "For what you did to my brother, I will destroy you utterly!"
"Salve!"
he heard Polixis shout from his left, but he had time only to glance in his direction. The apothecary was beset by more orcs, the hulking brutes of Urgork's bodyguard. Gladius lodged into one knob's throat and discarded, Justicia wielded now in both hands.
"Your unholy existence is at an end!"
Custer shouted as he turned back to Urgork, slamming Salve Imperata down once more. The Crozius Arcanum's disruptor field wouldn't reignite, but the chaplain wielded it nonetheless, limbs burning with the destructive energies of a Genhunt's Primaris, as he rained blows on the towering greenskin. Urgork simply soaked them up, the crunch of muscle and tendon seemingly neither inhibiting nor discomforting him. When the orc struck back, it did so with a force not even Custer could match. The skinning blades thumped through ceramite, shattering the stylized ribcage encasing the chaplain's breastplate, and scoring a wicked groove down the left temple of his helmet. It laid open his right thigh and sent blood pattering down onto black ceramite. Still, the ultramarine fought, his wounds nothing more than a dull ache, his body immune to the stunning impacts that rang from his helmet. The two giants stood and traded blows, almost too fast to follow, neither taking a backward step. Castor's fury only mounted as his armor registered more damage and his body bled.
"I will smash your unholy form apart, beast!" the chaplain growled, taking another hit to his pauldron. "And immolate your foul remains!"
One of them had to fall. Castor heard his brother's cry once more, and stole a glance long enough to see him being borne to the floor by two knobs, Justicia impaled through the torso of one of them.
"Helix!"
Castor bellowed, but the moment's distraction was enough for Urgork. One of the orc's blades cracked into Salve Imperata's haft, and the Crozius was sent spinning away, clattering against the rubble at the chaplain's feet. Custer barely had time to right himself before the warlord surged forwards with a roar, slamming his scarred head directly into the skull helm. There was a hideous crunch, and half of Custer's visor display blinked offline, the left lens crushed. The jarring impact forced him back a single step, and he found himself tripping amidst the rubble, his battered armor unable to fully support him any more. He fell, trying to roll with the impact, reaching for the Crozius, but Urgork's iron-shod boot struck him the moment he landed, slamming him back against the broken remnants of the apse with a horrid crunch.
"Too late, little black beaky!"
the warlord snarled, spittle and dark blood pattering down onto the chaplain.
"Your mate is mine now, see?"
Custer managed to turn his head. Polixis had been dragged down like his brother. The apothecary bellowed with desperate fury as he slammed the drill of his activated Narthesium into the skull of one knob, Justicia and his gladius already impaled in the other two. He was still fighting, still howling with a blood fury Custer had never seen in him, but any chance for finesse was gone in the crushing press of bodies.
"You won't take him!" he snarled up at Urgork. "Death is coming for you, beast! Can't you hear it? Be long gone by the time they is here,"
the monster snapped back.
"Maybe they can put your bits back together after I've chopped them up."
The orc struck. Castor brought his arms up in a protective cross, just in time to stop the blow caving in his skull. He grunted as the metal cut through his vambrace, severing sinew coils and biting to the bone. The hits kept coming. Urgork's frenzy insatiable, until blood was pouring from Custer's elbows, and his forearms were a mess of bloody ruin and hacked ceramite. He tried to push himself back up, to find the half-second to unleash his fury once again. But Urgork was relentless, his animalistic strength unfaltering. And then, suddenly the beast stopped. For a second, Custer thought the orc was trying to trick him into lowering his guard. Then he realized that, trick or not, this was his last chance. Teeth gritted, he dropped his arms. Urgork stood over him, transfixed. The madness had gone from his eyes, replaced by a glazed, unblinking expression. His maw began to foam, and his whole body became rigid. Slowly, the warlord started to shake. The spasm started as a tick in his left eye that spread rapidly until his whole form was shuddering. A low, unnatural whining sound erupted from his throat, and his jaw locked, the froth now overspilling and pattering down on Castor. The chaplain regained his feet, taking a step back in the rubble as he tried to decide whether to make a move for Salve Imperator, and whether his brutalized arms were still capable of lifting the blessed weapon. Urgorg's eyes refocused, but now, instead of hate-fueled madness, they were filled with emotions Custer had rarely seen in a greenskin before. Fear. Pain. Understanding. Urgorg tried to cast about, gaze roving as though he were seeking someone or something. Whatever it was, there was no sign of it. The rigidity in his body snapped, and he went down abruptly onto both knees, the whining noise replaced by a violent hacking cough that quickly became retching and then full-fledged choking. Custer moved further back as whatever seizure was gripping the warlord worsened, the orc's whole body spasming. He was sick, a thick, noxious, stinking stream of yellow bile splattering across the splintered flagstones and rubble at Castor's feet. The vile-looking liquid darkened as blood discolored it, followed by chunks of what looked like liquefied organs. The orc warlord managed to draw enough of a breath to spit out a word, blood and bile now pouring from his nose as well as his mouth. Then, with a last shuddering exhalation of gory vomit, he collapsed forwards and was still. Silence gripped the basilica, but then the howls of the orcs around Castor and his brother redoubled. Many were staring at the body of their warlord, slumped unceremoniously in a spreading pool of its own effluvium. Others cast looks back towards the basilica's main doors, where the searing light of plasma was now visible, accompanied by the click-boom of bolt rifles on full auto. Some of the aliens abruptly turned on those around them, fists flying as the larger greenskins realized that the command of the entire war was on offer to the strongest. Castor snatched up Salve Imperator with the one hand that was still responding, his genhancements failing to fully block the agony of his torn and broken limbs. He smashed the mace against the head of the last knob still pinning Polixis to the ground, sending a sudden splatter of cranial matter across the apothecary's battered armor. Polixis kicked the twitching corpse off him and rose once more to his feet, his gladius back in one fist. Back to back, Castor and Polixis stood their ground and surveyed the carnage around them, then each other.
"Good of you to join me, little brother," Polixis said.
Castor smiled.
"I couldn't let you have all the glory, Helix. What would the rest of the chapter say of the Fulminata if our apothecary finished a campaign with the highest kill tally of all of us?"
The fight had gone out of the orcs. Those not locked in their sudden struggle for supremacy with one another were panicking, realizing that more humans were storming the front of the basilica. They turned on one another in the sudden rush to escape, the Space Marines still at the back of the apse, completely forgotten. Polixis turned and looked down at his brother's forearms, at the bent and broken black ceramite, and the blood that still oozed from between the rent metal.
"What is your armor reading?" he asked.
"Left arm is shattered,"
Castor admitted, glancing at the remaining autosense readouts on his damaged visor display.
"I can still use the right."
Polixis didn't respond, and the chaplain looked at him. He sensed a sudden tension in his brother's stance, and saw his grey eyes widen as they focused on something behind Castor.
"Move!"
the apothecary shouted, thrusting his brother to one side. A green limb slammed through the suddenly empty space, cracking its fist against Polixis's breastplate and shattering one of the empty reserve cryovials hanging from around his neck. Castor spun, and found himself confronted once more by Urgorg. The foul monster had resurrected, blood and bile pouring from its eyes, ears, nose and mouth.
"Impossible," the chaplain breathed.
A keening noise escaped from the warlord's slack jaw as his whole body shook violently. He reached towards the two space marines with claws that clenched and unclenched with bone-crushing force.
"Back!"
Castor shouted as the huge orc lunged for him. Polixis, however, wasn't going back. He thrust past his brother, driving him to one side, knocking him from the path of Urgork's fist. Polixis, the older brother, Polixis the protector, Polixis, who would rather charge a starved crophound than abandon his sibling, even for a moment. Castor cried out in anger and horror, even as he stumbled. It had all been for nothing. He had failed. But Urgork's blow never fell. Silver steel flashed, and the orc's head flew from its shoulders, the hideous noise he had been making cut short by a jet of black blood and yellowing fluids. He crunched to his knees, and then finally slumped onto his side at the feet of the remains of Squad Tyro and Captain Demeter, his head bouncing away down the apse. The decapitated body twitched one more time, then was still. Behind it stood Severus. The Reaver was almost unrecognizable. Much of his bare head was raw or blackened by burns. Blood stained the white grin of his skull mask, and his larger left pauldron had been ripped away to reveal a shoulder that was little more than a mess of muscle and cartilage. Castor realized that the Reaver's left arm now ended at the elbow. In his remaining fist, he carried a combat knife that dripped with Urgork's blood.
"All objectives achieved," the Reaver said, voice tight with pain.
He stayed on his feet a moment longer, then collapsed. Cog Crusher. The Basilica of St. Albarac the Smelter resounded with the howls of dying greenskins. The Humies were long gone, evacuated on their flyers to where the battle in the slums still rumbled on. Greenskins had flooded in from all over the city, at first to crump the Beakies, and then, when they realized they'd slipped away, to contend for the new position of Big Boss. Cogcrusher had seen it all before. When a war boss went down, chaos ensued. It was just the way of things. Eventually a new leader would emerge, usually bigger and stronger than the one before, and the clans and mobs would rally to him. Until then, though, there was nothing but disunity. Orcs fought, grots cowered, and the squigs feasted on those not strong enough to survive the new status quo. The big mech knew better than to stick around through it all. He'd managed to get the big floaty tank fired up, at least. Both sides were working now, and the grots on the shooters he'd welded to the sides had specific orders to gun down any git that got too close to the technological wonder. A few minutes more, and they'd be out of the basilica and laying low until a new boss came forward, deserving Cogcrusher's services. That, or Cogcrusher would make a boss for himself. He found Grok crouched behind the ruins of Urgork's throne, the war boss's body lying trampled and forgotten nearby, while his former knobs beat the snot out of each other over the defiled altar. Cogcrusher approached as fast as his clanking body would permit, careful not to make eye contact with anyone. The pain boy looked up as the mech loomed over him, blinking his one remaining eye, his face a hideous melted morass of acid-eaten flesh.
"Cog,"
he slurred. Cogcrusher looked down at the thing the pathetic little runt was cradling. It was Urgork's severed head, eyes glassy, tongue hanging out, the blood from the ex-war boss's orifices slowly congealing.
"You's coming with me,"
Cogcrusher rasped, a metallic claw snagging the disfigured pain boy before he could run.
"And you's bringing the id with you."
Epilogue. Polixis. The Medicae Bay on the Spear of Macragge felt like an alien place to Polixis. It had been a Terran month since the apothecary had last stood within its white-tiled walls, lit by the harsh illumination of the surgical lamps, the air thrumming softly with active vitae monitors and health systems. It felt like it had been a lifetime. This was his domain, and yet he had never been comfortable in it. Not the way Castor was with the chapel of the Dioscuri, the spear of Macragge's primary place of worship. The Medicaid ward was a workplace to Polixis, nothing more and nothing less. The location he thought of as home, the green and golden fields of Ajax, was long lost to him. Castor sat on one of the metal examination plates near the bay's center, his legs over the side, clad in a simple black chitin. He was looking down at his exposed forearms. The thick muscles were crisscrossed with dozens of deep, raw lacerations, made lumpen and discolored by the synthskin plasts Polixis had applied. His left arm was bound in ferroplate splints, kept in place by a cast of fiber mesh that was still setting. The air was heavy with the chemical stink of counterseptics.
"You can't stop me from returning," the chaplain said, still looking at his injuries.
"Is there anyone who can? Certainly not Lieutenant Tyrannus, nor even the Codex Astartes, it seems."
Castor looked up, and there was a fire in his eyes. But it died quickly when it met with Polixis's cool gaze. He looked back down again, speaking slowly.
"As soon as I have confirmation from Artificer Fren that my battle plate is functional once more, I am rejoining the Demi-Company."
"I know," Polixis allowed. "So long as you don't mind fighting single-handed for the week, it will take your bones to set.
The Emperor will be my shield."
The two lapsed into silence. Polixis turned away, washing his hands in a surgical scrub bowl beside the plate. Like his brother, he was unarmored, clad now in the white robes of the Apothecarian, the stylized red helix tattoo of his position laid bare on his right arm. As he scrubbed his brother's blood from his palms, his thoughts strayed back to Shabbat. The Fulminata had lost a single brother during the insertion into the city, Otho of Squad Domitian, whose plasma weapon had finally overheated during the storming of the Basilica and seared away much of his upper body. Another life lost for him. He'd spent every day telling himself that was not the case. The reason for the massed mobilization across the front had been the chance to kill Urgork. That plan had succeeded. Yet he feared the numbers of the slain would continue to rise. In the cryo unit next to the bay lay Severus, his broken body suspended in a hibernation state by his Sus-An membrane. When Polixis had seen the Reaver just after killing Urgork, he had suspected he was only functioning thanks to his Belisarian furnace, the implant unique to Primaris that drove a warrior into a hyper-aggressive state following a fatal wound. Severus, however, did not yet seem ready to pass over. Polixis had asked Castor to pray for him. He had endured enough loss as it was.
"You should not have come," the apothecary said, almost without meaning to.
He turned off the bowl's water pump and looked back at his brother. Castor did not return his gaze, though he had lowered his scarred forearms to his lap.
"I know," he said, "but you would have, for me."
"That does not make it right."
"I do not regret my decision, brother."
"What will they do to you?"
"A council of the Reclusion will be convened, once they have processed Tyrannus's report," Castor said, finally looking up at his brother.
His scarred expression was heavy with disappointment.
"If practical, I will be removed to Blessed Macragge to stand trial. If not, I will do so via hololithic attendance. I suspect it will be within the month."
"It seems unjust," Polixis said.
Castor smiled sadly.
"I broke the tenets of the Codex. I will be judged by those same tenets now. That is as it should be."
"True enough," Polixis allowed.
He moved to check the containment seal of the mortuary casks that lay in a data-locked vault beneath the bay, the salvaged organs of recovered Primaris corpses stored in the heavy, hoarfrost-coated ice crates in the sub-zero chamber. Among them were the harvested remains of the bodies of Squad Tyro and Captain Demeter, or at least what Polixis had been able to retrieve. The Fulminata had removed Urgork's trophies when they evacuated, and the armor plates were now being tended to by the Spear of Macragge's tech savants and repair teams in the lower decks. The company banner had also been returned. Its tattered, bloody folds hung reverently within the chapel of the Dioscuri. They would be borne into battle once more in only a few hours. The Fulminata would be returning to Ikara 9, ready to prosecute the green-skin menace once again.
"Will your battle plate be repaired in time for an immediate return to the surface?" Polixis asked, as he stepped back out of the containment vault, seeking to ease the events of the past few days with simple words.
"I await friend's assessment," Castor said. "That will have to be enough. If the Xenos fleet was to return now, I would have to don it, regardless of its state."
Polixis nodded in agreement. The most vital blow of all, following Urgork's death, had fallen against the Ork ship assets. When it became apparent the warlord really was dead, the Xenos vessels anchored in high orbit had turned on one another, each captain desperate to ensure control over its most prized assets. Broadsides, ramming runs, and boarding actions had decimated the alien fleet as a full-scale civil war took hold. Rear Admiral Corran hadn't hesitated. Supported by the Spear of Macragge, his ships had returned from the system's edge and wrested control of Ikara's orbital anchorages from the scattering Xenos fleet. The arrival of their flagship had afforded the Fulminata the chance to resupply fully for the first time since the campaign had begun. Tyrannus had authorized 24 hours aboard the strike cruiser. The demi-company's overlords had extracted them from the edge of Shabbat while guard forces were still mustering for a renewed offensive, and the greenskins continued to show no sign of a counterattack. While Tyrannus himself had expressed displeasure at the Fulminata's withdrawal, however brief, it was apparent that the Primaris needed it. Ammunition was short, and not a single warrior hadn't suffered injuries or sustained damage to his war gear. When the Ultramarines returned, it would be in full force.
"This cannot happen again," Polixis said. "Swear that when we strike upon the anvil once more, you will not risk your all, let alone the lives of others, for my sake."
"I have broken enough oaths," Castor said, holding his brother's gaze. "I will not make another that could further shame me. I did not set out to find you for oaths or promises. I did it for a memory. For Ajax. For a home that no longer exists, but will not die so long as we both live."
"You are too sentimental by half," Polixis said. "What use have we for memories of home, brother?
If you saw the men and women I speak to on the eve of battle, you would not ask me that, Helix. You would not ask them. They know what purpose those memories serve. They bring hope on cold, dark nights, and courage in the heat of battle. Without my own memories, how could I ever address them, put steel in their bellies and fire in their throats? My words would be lies, sowing only dead ash."
Polixis paused, his head dipping briefly.
"Forgive me, brother," he said, approaching the slab once more and sitting down beside Castor. "It has been a long campaign. Or it has at least felt like one."
"What did they do, Polixis?" Castor asked.
"The greenskins and their witch."
The memory of the shaman forcing itself into his mind made the apothecary's skin crawl. Even the hideous defilement of his brother's corpses had paled in comparison to the violation of feeling an alien presence in his own thoughts. He answered without looking at his brother.
"Perhaps I will tell you one day. Perhaps not."
It seemed as though Castor would press the matter, but then he looked down and tapped the splints on his broken arm.
"A week, you say?" he asked.
"If you rest it."
"And how much chance is there of that, brother apothecary?" Castor asked.
Polixis realized he was smiling for the first time since Shabbat.
"Probably none, unless I accompany you personally to make sure you don't do anything more reckless."
Castor's smile widened. Polixis nodded towards the chrono display on the Medicay Bay's wall.
15 minutes until Captain Tyrannus's insertion briefing. We had best be on our way."
The apothecary checked Severus's Vitae monitor and left him in the care of the serf attendants, while he and his brother departed for the Spear of Macragge's bridge. side by side, once again. That was Blood of Ajax by Robbie McNiven, read by John Banks. This recording is copyrighted to Games Workshop 2018.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.